Welcome to another edition of Sea Control, your moment of PowerPoint rehab from the Center for International Maritime Security. Today, we decided an excellent topic for discussion would be the littoral combat ship, or better yet, replacements for it, because recently LCS has been under attack. We've seen a decrease in the number of ships ordered, we've seen a decrease in the requested rate of production, and now a request for information is out for possible replacements of the ship. So, we took the author of It's Time for a Sea Control Frigate from Proceedings, one of our SimSec writers, Zach Howitt, and we brought him in to discuss his concept for a future small to mid-sized combatant and some of the numbers being thrown around about the production of a future combatant and what it might mean for the United States Navy. Should be a good time. Zach's a smart guy and his article is fantastic if you haven't read it. So we'll take a short break and we'll be right back with you with Zach Howitt on Sea Control.
Do you enjoy Sea Control? Sure you do. You're one of the good ones. We are available on iTunes and Stitcher Stream Radio. Leave a comment, a 5-star rating, and tell a friend. Did I just mention you should tell a friend? You should definitely tell a friend. We value the input and perspective we get from our listeners. We think Sea Control is a very fine product, and anyone who says otherwise thinks Europe is a country.
And we're back. So one of the main concerns, as we said before today, is the U.S. Navy's ship procurement program. There's been a lot of talk about the LCS. Problems with its modular mission pods, problems with its performance. There's a lot of questions on whether or not this should be the ship of the future, and a lot of folks agree. Deputy Defense Secretary Christine Fox put out a memo directing the Navy to slash its long-term LCS buy from 52 vessels to 32 earlier this year. And these 32 vessels, it looks like their production is going to be slowing from 3 to 2 a year because the House Armed Services Subcommittee on Sea Power and Projection has sent out that request. Meanwhile, a request for information has been put out on April 30th for an LCS alternative based on modern-day existing hulls, and that was given a 22-day... Now, here in the United States, we're producing ships. We're producing capable and competent warships, small ships like the Ambassador Mark III from Pascagoula, Mississippi, but they're going to folks like the Egyptian. So what are we going to build for ourselves? How can we fix LCS, or what will replace LCS? And I have with me today the author of the excellent, excellent Proceedings article, It's Time for a Sea Control Frigate, Zach Howitt. Zach, thanks for joining us.
Hey, it's great to be here. It's really a privilege to be on Sea Control. I've been a listener since episode one, so I appreciate it.
Wow. First of all, then let me apologize then for the awful audio on episode 1 through 4, roughly. It takes a while to figure out how to do this properly. So your article, and let me preface this, you sent me a copy of this. It printed in April, but you sent me a copy around February, so this was almost – you probably sent this to me before the comments by Secretary Christine Fox came out. So this is really forward-thinking article about what a small mid-size or mid-sized combatant for the United States Surface Fleet should look like. But before we go into that if you could, for our audience, go ahead, describe yourselves in your own words. What's the important beats? Where are you coming from, and what kind of informed your interest and your perspective on this article?
Sure. Well, like you, I commissioned out of Navy ROTC, and I was on two FDNF ships in Yokosuka, Japan. FDNF is a forward deployed naval force, and you know, I had a roller coaster ride there in the FDNF, both personally and professionally. I ran into all sorts of stuff. We took a FDNF ship going into a maintenance cycle and deployed it to 5th Fleet on only a few weeks' notice. And then we did a lot of real-world operations, including ballistic missile defense. I just recently was given an opportunity to commission into the reserve component a little bit before my actual contract obligation ends. And this summer, I'm planning to move out to Silicon Valley and jump into the mobile tech scene there. So I'm also looking for stuff to do in the reserves. But that's kind of where I am. Yeah, I just kind of got interested by reading articles and with the whole LCS debate, just like anybody else. It really piqued my interest. So.
Well, let's start out with the term that you use in the title. So folks think, oh, it's a Navy warship. The layman thinks it's the one with the guns and it's one with the flat deck that the aircraft come off. And your particular term, Sea Control Frigate, it's very nuanced. You're going for a particular mission or capacity there. Maybe describe, before we go into the details, describe what do you mean by a Sea Control Frigate?
Right. Well, I guess I'll give you kind of an overview. This Sea Control Frigate it wasn't really a defined term before the article. I Googled it before I put the name into the article, and there really wasn't anything that came up. But I needed something to describe exactly what I was trying to make. And those that are following the frigate comparisons and debate, they know that there was a patrol frigate that Huntington Ingalls was marketing before I came out with this idea. And it's sort of old news, this patrol frigate. And I wanted to coin something separate from patrol frigate. I needed another idea. And so Sea Control Frigate kind of has the notion of a blue water frigate that's meant for specific missions, anti-submarine warfare, escort operations, instead of a patrol frigate, which is kind of fits a different niche. So I wanted to have that clear separation.
So describe, using the lens of LCS. So a lot of folks already know, and for those who don't, I'll give a short description. The whole concept of LCS, there's two different designs by two different companies, and the overall concept was we're going to build this ship with the ability to pop in different modules. So if you needed ASW one day or you needed mine warfare another day, you could mix and match in a very short period of time. And a lot of the problems that came out from this is that the modules don't switch out as quickly or the modules don't work. Some are successful, some don't, but oftentimes it takes a week or more to switch these out, which was not the original intent. And it's very phase zero heavy. So it has, it's a big flight deck. It's got a lot of space. It's very versatile, but survivability when the flag drops is a question on a lot of people's minds. So giving that very, very sloppy description of an LCS, in comparison, describe what it is that the ship you describe in your article would look like and do.
Okay, well, let me first say what you're describing is, it's first you have to realize where the LCS came from. And the LCS was defined in 2001. That's when it was first announced. And, that was about, 15 years ago? And it was, if you look
it's
at the
kinda
time
It's kind of
crazy
to
between,
think about. Yeah, that was
right,
15 years ago. And to us, it still seems like yesterday.
Right. 15 years ago, and we are at a completely different state from 15 years. 15 years ago, we weren't really thinking about China, right? It was more the war on terrorism. It was littorals and everything. Now, LCS has its problems, and I think that we'll be able to overcome those problems. I'm actually not a LCS hater. I actually do think that LCS can provide us some value, especially if we do some really creatively. I think that it's almost necessary for the type of module work that LCS does. It's necessary for really the future of our Navy. Just as the Zumwalt will help us in defining another ship class in the future. But what we can't fix, the problems that we can't fix in the LCS, is the fact that it's not fit for blue water missions. And specifically, the combat systems, its survivability features, its manning, and most importantly, I think, its endurance. which is you could throw LCS whichever way you want to, but the bottom line is, you know, it's not a good independent deployer for a long-term mission, kind of without any tethered supply ships.
Okay, so that's a good setup, and I'll admit I started as an LCS hater, and I've come around a little bit to the folks that are trying to give it some mission direction and function. I mean, we all make mistakes, and you know, there were problems with every new weapon systems all the way back to the monitor when it was first built. So, you know, we get our fevers up, and then somebody brings us back down and figures out something sane to do. But okay, so we've set up this view of this current program. So your ship, in the article, kind of describe for us what it would look like. Maybe a comparison to some other warships that folks may know, like what makes it different from a destroyer, or what makes a digger different than the Oliver Hazard Perry frigate, and kind of what are some of the packages that when you imagine your sea control frigate that you would put on it.
Sure. So the sea control frigate that I defined in the article, it has a VLS cell with 16 missile cells, and the cells can accommodate the long range anti-ship missile that the Navy is right now manufacturing, and it could also support the ASROC, which stands for anti-submarine rocket. And the ESSM, which is the Evolved Sea Sparrow missile. So the ESSM is anti-air warfare, the ASROC's anti-submarine warfare, and the long-range anti-ship missiles anti-surface warfare. It can support those three missiles, supposedly. And there are also some survivability upgrades that I looked at.
Give us some examples as to the kind of survivability issues that you've tried to solve. Because I remember in your article, you brought up the Coast Guard's high-security cutter, and you talked about, you know, this is a capable ship. Now, it doesn't have the survivability requirements that the Navy has, but I'll throw in this example. You know, a lot of the redundancy that the Navy used to call for was removed on something like the Oliver Hazard Perry. It was built specifically for a lot of automation, because they wanted a lot more numbers. They wanted to put something out into the fleet, so they accepted some risk. So you're trying to rebuild, you're trying to take away some of that risk. You think that we all do, being sailors, that survivability is important because our lives depend on the thing that we're standing on top of, which is floating in the middle of the ocean. So yeah, describe kind of some of the things that you've added into this design of yours that would sort of tend towards a more survivable platform.
Sure. Well, you know, when I started looking at the patrol frigate platform to build on, the biggest issue was survivability by far, and that's why kind of everybody dismissed it. Nobody kind of seemed to say, hey, instead of just dismissing it, what can we do to kind of to help it out? And so when I got in touch with the Ingalls folks, I kind of asked them about a couple different survivability points. Like, and one interesting thing that they did on the Alvaro de Bazan frigate, the Spanish frigate, they installed the anti-vibration engine mounts. They were the first first warship in its type of warship to do that. So, you know, I was researching that, and I saw it, and I said, hey, why can't we do that with a NSC-based frigate? Because the whole idea is that the National Security Cutter, its engine was not designed to the same – it's kind of loud. It wasn't designed for a sea control mission to go out and do anti-submarine warfare. So – that's one possible thing, and I also looked at a bunch of other things, ballistic resistant protection, and a bunch of different damage control devices. But the bottom line is that survivability is still going to be an issue, it's basically there are two ways we can go about it. One is we can say, you know what, the survivability isn't good enough for us. to, all right, the thing is that there's still going to be a survivability issue no matter what. And the Navy has a ton of requirements that a frigate would have to meet. Actually, some of these requirements aren't even defined yet, but because there's been kind of a new revision to the survivability instruction, which I mentioned in the article. But there are just a ton of these requirements, and a sea control frigate, or really any warship for that matter, it's not going to meet all of them. Especially things that are very, very specific. As I mentioned in the article, the fire main systems and things like that. There's just very specific things detailing kind of requirements detailing fire main description, fire main systems, and a bunch of other systems. And the right now the National Security Cutter isn't built with that. And so we can modify it further. It's really just all about the cost analysis. How much survivability are we going to, what can we do for the amount of money that we have? Do we take existing systems and do we redesign it? Or we say, hey, you know, these systems, let's leave them in place and let's modify these other things.
So what you're describing is your sea control frigate, it's a new platform, and you sort of segued right there into talking about the high security cutter and the Spanish frigate. So there's been this request for information put out April 30th. Everybody's got 22 days to bring the Navy LCS alternatives, with the whole intention being 22 days doesn't give you the time to rebuild a whole ship. It's, here are your requirements. You have 22 days to take what you've got and bring me something else. In your article, you talk about some Nordic designs. Here we're talking about some U.S. designs with the Coast Guard. What do you think is going to come back from this? What are some of the platforms when you imagine, hey, you know, I'm probably not going to get the Navy. It took 15 years to develop LCS, so the Navy's probably not going to build my thing, but maybe it'll build something close. What are some of the platforms that you think of when you're trying to divine what kind of replacement's going to come out for LCS?
Sure. Well, there are a bunch of European designs that can be looked at, as I mentioned in my article. And a lot of these designs are good. A lot of these designs are something that if it might even be better than a sea control frigate. But I kind of looked at the big picture, and the National Security Cutter, it's a hot production line. It's a hot item. They're making it right now, and it makes a lot of sense. It makes most sense for kind of a national security cutter derivative, something that's built in America versus foreign design. So it kind of has a political aspect to it. I'm not too sure if anybody will pitch a foreign design to the Navy. I think really the outcome is going to be Huntington Ingalls NSC derivative and modified LCSs, because there just may be too much red tape surrounding getting a European frigate into America and designing it. That's not to say that it can't be done, but just the timeline that we have, the political situation, I just can't imagine it being done. And if we did this properly 10 years ago, 5 years ago, then, you know, maybe we should have taken European design and kind of maybe run with it. Or even better yet, we should, 15 years ago, we should have just designed an organic frigate from the start, but unfortunately we don't really have that flexibility.
That is the unfortunate part about this is we have kind of painted ourselves into a box. You know, technology is great, but sometimes I saw us commenting to somebody that there was an article about, hey, you know, this so-and-so company comes out with a drawing for its new idea, and it's like, thanks, don't want that. That's called a drawing. You know, I can go to the art museum and see plenty of those, and the next time we spend $1 billion on somebody who has a cool drawing, it's probably not going to happen, you know, because I feel like this has been a definite – it was a good idea. You know, that's the thing you can't fault. It was a good idea. The ability to make something modular and switch it out is an awesome idea, but that's something that you definitely want to have a proven concept first. So we're going to take a quick break, and Zach will come back. We'll come back with Zach in a moment. So we'll be back in a second.
Great content from the Center for International Maritime Security. Like the Sea Control podcast? It's at your fingertips. Go to www.cimsec.org. Don't forget to sign up at www.simsec.org/about/membership. to get our articles and announcements by email. And hey, if you feel inspired, feel free to write us an article or two, or five. Make sure to check out our partners. Our friends at the Australian Strategic Policy Institute produce the Sea Control Asia Pacific edition. Our friends at the Phoenix Think Tank produce Sea Control East Atlantic. This and other fine forums can be found on our homepage. Join the discussion.
All right, and we're back. Zach, we've talked a lot so far about the kind of capabilities, and we've talked about redundancy and survivability. These are all well and good once a ship hits the water, but in order for it to hit the water, somebody's got to pay for it. Somebody's got to build it. It's got to be rolled out, and that's an intricate process. And so a big part of this question with these LCS replacements and improvements to the platform itself is going to be the numbers. From when do we build these things, how soon do we need them, how much it's going to cost. And you have a number of thoughts on this issue, so I thought I'd just open it up to you to wax poetic about them.
Right, yeah. Well, you know, I did a cost analysis on this. It looks like the LCS is coming up to about $550 million for these 20 ships that might or might not be replaced. So if you do the math, like a little multiplication, you quickly figure out that a Sea Control frigate is going to cost a little bit more than the LCS. If there's the same amount of funding, then we're going to have a lot less of the Sea Control frigate. So for about 20 LCSs, you get about 14 Sea Control frigates. This is, you know, based on my calculations. One of the article's has ignited a huge conversation. And that's one of the topics people bring up. They're like, well, this kind of Sea Control frigate, which is around $800 million, we'd be buying a lot less of them than a littoral combat ship. That, I think, is the biggest issue, because it's kind of hard to rationalize, well, why all these ship numbers going down, why are we building less ships? So that's the biggest uphill battle here, I think, for getting the Sea Control frigate in. And the answer to that is, one, they're apples and oranges, right? Because the littoral combat ship, it's meant for the littorals, it's a different mission. And if you throw an LCS out on a mission, a blue water mission, then it's not suited for that. So why even have it? But there's something even more. If we just look at the numbers, and we look at the kind of the operating schedule of the LCS, the 3-2-1 plan. They're going to be sea swapping crews in every
now,
4 months.
Quick, real quick, for those who don't know in the audience, explain the 3-2-1.
So it's a sea swap. Littoral combat ships, they'll be deployed for 16 months. and they'd be basically rotating back and forth. So there's going to be three crews. The three stands for the three crews between two ships, and one will be deployed. This is a lot different than the regular deployment cycle, where you go out for a deployment 7 or 8 months and you come back and go through maintenance periods and whatnot. So when you actually take the amount of time that the ships are out to sea doing missions, the LCS versus a sea control frigate or another platform like the DDG, what I actually found out is that the sea control frigate has just as much underway time as the LCS, if there are 14 sea control frigates and 20 LCSs, it'll manage still about 5 or 6 ships a day underway for either one.
And that's based on sea control frigates, this whatever this ship is, being of the normal stock. So it's a ship that has a crew that doesn't rotate, correct?
Right. Now the sea control frigate, it would just be a normal deployment cycle. The ones that kind of we're using for the DDGs and the Perry class right now. So in my model, I looked at the different underway time, the different projections, and the LCS, although the one benefit to it is, you are forward deployed, and that's good, and you have that forward presence. But when you look at actual mission time, there's with 20 LCSs, you get about 5 ships per day at sea doing missions. And if you think about it, only 50% of the ship, 50% of LCSs are deployed. And of those 50%, about half of them are going to be in port at all times. So I found that source from a couple different places and if we look at the sea control frigate, it's even with 14 of them, the percentage of the amount of time that you're actually underway is actually more than the LCS. So if you have 14 frigates, you average about 4.5-5 ships per day at sea. And if you have 20 LCSs, you also average that same amount. So it's about the same. Now, I'm not saying the 3-2-1 is a bad idea. I think it's a good idea. I know that you have issues with the C-swap, Matt.
Yes, it is. But, it is a trap.
When you look at the numbers and just purely, you put it into Excel, the 3-2-1 is a good idea for littoral missions, right? For just basing a ship in Singapore or Bahrain and just going out and doing stuff every now and then, going out for a couple of days, a week or two back. That's good. For a sea control frigate, it will average actually more underway days than an LCS. So when you're looking at the amount of the sheer number of numbers of the ship, the frigate is actually just about on par with LCS as far as the amount of ships we'll be able to put out to sea per day.
Now, one of the things you mentioned was the cost. So you're imagining, when you talk about cost, are you talking about your envisioned sea control frigate design? Or are we talking about something where, say, the high security gets rejiggered a little bit and then it is deployed as a bolster to LCS or the LCS replacement, or whatever you wish to call it? Because in that case, like you and I had discussed kind of offline, that line's already producing ships. Boom, 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 they're coming out. So your calculations, what kind of ship is that based on? Because at least in my head, doing completely non-math, I think this is a ship that's already being produced. You've already got economies of scale. It should be cheaper to build than an LCS.
Right. Yeah. There's a lot of stuff that goes into the cost. I threw out a price of $800 million in my article. And I didn't really have the time to explain that much on how I got that number. But I will say this is that that they are building national security cutters right now by the ones, right? It's actually the last one was a single contract. And people pointed out that, hey, the last national security cutter cost $730 million. And I come back and say, yeah, that's true, but the Coast Guard ordered one of them. They ordered one because of they're basically ordering one at a time. When they ordered three at a time, the price was something like $680 million. So, you know, you had a $50 million cost savings. When you look at economies, scale, you know, with a sea control frigate, if the Navy's going to order, 14 of them, then you're talking about, a good price reduction there. So I basically took the average price of the national security cutter, $680 million, and then you remove some Coast Guard features that the Navy doesn't need.
Like rugs and Bose speakers. I'd like to keep those. But when we got the USS Zephyr was one of the Coasty PCs, and that was one of the ones I served on, and I showed up and I said, what's all this carpet? And there's, oh, this place is great. And then we went to another one and said, oh, the floors are back to being hard deck and nobody's installed speakers in any of this. So this one is in-serv compliant. This other one, well, that was the nice one.
Right. The bottom line is the price will balloon a lot based on the amount of how much features the price will balloon a lot based on the survivability features, how far you want to go with the survivability. And I threw out the $800 million. It's going to be around there. In a couple of years, you'll find that because of inflation, the price is going to actually more look like $1 billion. It's going to move closer to $1 billion, especially the projections. But as of now, I'm talking about things compared to the LCS. And the LCS with mission modules is about $550 million. Z control frigate's about $800 million. The LCS is 70% of the cost. For 20 LCSs, we can buy 14 sea control frigates, give or take one frigate. And with 14 frigates, we'll have just as much time out to sea doing missions as 20 littoral combat ships.
So I just want to get your thoughts on one thing. With LCS, there was an international version that was going to be sold or was at least pushed out there as a possible buy-in from foreign countries. And this one had, like you described, a VLS, and it had a phased array radar. What are your thoughts on that? Maybe is it more likely that this replacement that the Navy's looking for – so you've got your answer – not your answer, sorry, but you've got an answer. You describe the high security cutter. What are your thoughts on this alternative design of LCS being the answer? So you keep your product line open, you save yourself some of the face because you invested so much in this program, but you build a ship that's a little bit more complicated, a little bit more robust. Where do you think that in the end this request for information is going to fall down?
Well, here's the thing with the up-armed LCS. One is that no matter, it's still an LCS. And it still doesn't have the endurance that a sea control frigate has, and it's still not optimized for blue water missions, no matter what you throw on there. So that's number one. Number two is you're rolling the dice, because do we really want to take the chance for cost overruns with taking the hull and extending it or increasing the weight and throwing all these stuff on there that nobody's ever considered. On the other hand, the NSC derivative sea control frigate, you're not changing the hull at all. And there are already spaces that we're putting the VLS that were kind of reserved. It's basically we can get a fixed price. You know, I spoke to a number of different sources in the industry, and the sea control frigate, you get a fixed price contract, which means there will be no cost overruns. Which is a huge advantage, because if we go with an up-armed LCS, there's no way in heck I think that they'd be able to do a fixed cost contract, because they'd be changing the ship so dramatically. So is that really what we want to do? Do we really want to take an LCS and roll the dice and maybe it'll balloon up another $100 million or so, whereas a sea control frigate is a very defined price, something kind of that we need, because so Congress can stop saying, hey, why did this ship just cost two more billion dollars?
That's a good point. A great precedent for us and a dangerous precedent for some with the fixed price contract. And in fact, if anybody listening wants to go back, we had a great interview with Eric Prince a few weeks back. I forget which episode, but he mentioned that too. So a lot of folks talk about, you know, professional or private military contractors, and some of them run on insanely a fixed price. You know, shipbuilding, you'd think, be more inclined to a fixed price contract than security contracting, because who knows what happens. You know, a ship is ship. You have a design. You're supposed to build it to the design spec. A security environment is so much more different, and if PMCs can operate on a fixed contract, you know, there should be no question that a ship designer should be able to do it too, because otherwise the designs, he's sort of opening the gates and admitting that the designs that he's given you are garbage anyways, because he has to keep rebuilding them. But, you know, I'm sure you and I have our biases here from being on the butt end of some of those contracts. Well, Zach, you know what? It's been a pleasure having you. I think that this was, to plug this, a great article. I said before, I think I got it back. I think you actually sent it me back in December. So this is... It came out this last month's edition. It's time for a sea control frigate. Just a great article. Even if you don't necessarily agree with the conclusions, it's just a good way to look at and understand and kind of get yourself into the mindset of somebody who's trying to build a warship. So the kinds of things that are required and some of those intricacies. Because I think a lot of the folks that talk about maritime security and what have you, or warships, they don't really understand that aspect. So they see the surface, they don't scratch below it, and that's what a lot of the utility here in Zach's article, outside the great insights on a possible future ship. So before we close out, Zach, I wanted to know, you've got your innovation files at SimSec, so I'll plug that for you and us. But is there anything else that you're doing that you want to plug, maybe projects that you're working on, or even – I'll even throw this out there. If you're reading a good book right now and you're not even the one who wrote it, but you think people should, throw it out there too. So anything you think we should walk away with.
Well, a couple things. One, I want to first of all, Matt, you've actually you helped a lot with the article, and so did a lot of people. I know that I was listed as kind of the lone author there. Scott Cheney Peters really helped me out, as well as Lieutenant Commander Armstrong, as well as you and a bunch of others. So I do really appreciate all your help in getting the article to where it is today. And also I do want to thank the Ingalls team. You know, I first reached out to them in August, and I kind of just cold called them. And it was kind of like, hey, you know, I have this idea for a sea control frigate. And at the time, nobody really the fact that the LCS was going to get cut wasn't on anybody's mind. Nobody thought that. So nobody was really thinking about it. And I was like, hey, can we do this? Can we install this? And they really spent a lot of time, effort to research and come back to me. And so I do appreciate that they're very professional at that, even though I was just kind of a junior lieutenant, kind of with these wacky ideas. So innovation files, yeah, I'm coming out with a couple others. Going to reserves gives a little bit more time for me to write some stuff. But one thing I want to mention, you'll see it coming out shortly, is one thing called an electronic zone inspection manager. And this is something that, you know, unfortunately I wasn't able to execute, but I made this program that helps for zone inspections.
So real quick, for those, again, for the non-initiated, and trust me, you don't want to be in the audience, a zone inspection, so a ship's a really big place, right? It doesn't just clean itself. Every single space should ostensibly have a little sheet of paper with a checklist, and you do it by zones, because there's no way that you could do your job and inspect the whole ship every day, all the time, at the level of command that they expect it to be. So zone inspection is something, say, hey, you know, we'll do this zone or this zone today, and all the khaki will get together, and they'll go out in a team, and they'll inspect the different spaces for the really small stuff. So that's kind of what he's talking about. It's a very big program. It's a program that, you know, it's not big and shiny and cool, but it's something that can be important. So, anyways, I'm sorry, Zach. Go ahead.
So I'll be coming out with that article, and there are a couple other things that I'll be I'm looking forward to be writing about. One is a new idea for a tactical chat, and another is I've been spending several months researching a new kind of retirement pension system, and I know that kind of strikes everybody as like, oh no, you're getting rid of the retirement system, whatever. But I've been talking to a lot of people and really thinking about a good alternative that actually benefits every military member and keeps the cost down. So I'm going to publish some of that probably the next couple months.
All right, perfect. And for everybody else, the typical plugs, we are the Center for International Maritime Security, and this is your podcast, Sea Control. We are available on iTunes and Stitcher Stream Radio, which you already know because you're listening to us. But of course, that's great information to tell all of your friends. And if you would like to find our website, again, a place you've probably been, and if you haven't been there, www.cimsec.org, and on Twitter we are at CIMSEC. And of course, I am Matt Hipple, your host, and you can find me on Twitter at America Hipple, AmericaHipple on Twitter too. And of course, you can find me at SimSec, because that's where I am, and that's where this podcast is too. Zach, again, thanks a lot for joining us.
All right, appreciate it. Thank you, Matt.